Hi, it's Monday 24th February. I'm Hannah Pearson from Per Anderson.
And I'm Gary Bauman from Check In Asia.
On today's show, we'll be talking about the latest coronavirus developments, economic stimulus measures in Singapore and Malaysia, the upcoming Tutti Tutti Malaysia domestic trade show, and we'll take a look at the toughest job in tourism marketing in 2020.
So let's get started. This is the Southeast Asia Travel Show.
Hello, wherever you are in the world, thanks for listening in. Well, it's been another torrid week for tourism in Asia. So, Gary, what did you get up to these
days? Surprise, surprise, most of my work has been involving the coronavirus. There's no way to avoid it.
No.
A lot of our clients are in a state of shock and trying to work out what's going to happen, not just in the immediate short term, but medium term and also towards the end of the year.
Yeah.
Everybody's hoping for a rebound, but we just don't know where it's going to happen.
Yeah.
We'll be talking about this throughout the show, but yeah, in terms of my week, that's pretty much where it ended up for me.
Yep.
And yourself, you actually been traveling again. You've been down to Singapore. You took a super fast trip.
I did. So, I mean, I spent a lot of time earlier last week debating, do I dare risk it going to Singapore? And at that time, Singapore had one of the highest numbers of coronavirus infections outside of China. And I thought, you know what? It feels under control there. The government know who's got it. They're tracing all the clusters. And people are still traveling there. They're still working there. They're still living there.
Yeah.
So what's the big deal?
Yeah.
So I went and it was fine.
And it was fine.
It was fine.
The flight, was it full? Was it empty?
It was about half full or half empty, depending on your
being
optimistic or pessimistic. But yeah, it was definitely a bit of a depressing trip. I was mainly meeting travel agencies in Singapore, and they're really, really suffering.
Right.
I mean, these are outbound travel agencies rather than inbound ones.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they're saying their business has dropped 100%, 95% on last year's numbers. And
and there's not much light at the moment.
There really isn't much light, you know. They've put staff on unpaid leave or told them to clear their annual leave from last year. The phones aren't ringing, and they say if the phones do ring, it's literally just another customer asking to cancel a holiday. So it was a depressing trip.
Yeah. Well, let's not get too gloomy, because we've got more depressing information to come. Well, actually, last week, because of this, and I, we co-hosted an event for the American Chamber of Commerce in Malaysia, here in KL.
We did.
And it was called Beyond Travel and Tourism, looking at how the coronavirus is obviously impacting the most important sectors of the industry, so airlines, hotels, tour operators, travel agents, but also trying to look a little bit further about how it's radiating across the economy into outsourced sectors from the travel sector, but also supplying sectors and just general, the economic malaise that seems to be happening at the moment.
Yeah.
I mean, and we had some interesting feedback. We were also on the panel with us was Phil C, who's the CEO of Fireflies, which is a domestic airline in Malaysia.
Yes.
It's owned by Malaysia Airlines Company.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that was super interesting because we really had his first-hand, I guess, view of how it is impacting the aviation industry.
Yeah.
Because Firefly is that member of Malaysia Airlines, then he then has kind of knowledge of how's it going at Malaysia Airlines, how's it going at Mas Wings, which is the subsidiary in Borneo, and Firefly. And like you said, Firefly is a domestic airline. But what we both found, I think, really interesting is that he called them a bellwether, really, for the confidence in consumer and business travel.
Yeah.
So he said Firefly customers typically have a very short booking window.
Yeah.
What was it, maybe 3 to 4 days, something like that.
Yeah.
It is just domestic trips, but he could see just from that bookings are down.
Yeah.
And he said even if the bookings are still there, there's a lot of no-shows.
Yeah.
People are deciding that they're not flying.
Right.
And so they've booked the ticket, never mind,
don't
bother to get the cancellation fee.
Yeah. He also made some interesting comments about how the airline sector, really a very important part of the airline sector, is cargo.
Yeah.
And he made some differential points about the cargo of incoming and outgoing flights and domestic flights and how it's impacting them. We won't give away too many details that he said because it was a closed session, but it was very, very interesting that this is really having an impact, not just on passenger travel, but also cargo levels.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it was interesting, we got a lot of feedback from the crowd as well. So we had some travel agencies there who were talking about airlines not necessarily giving refunds for groups, but maybe they're refunding FIT, and then that becomes a bit of a problem for travel agencies, because how do you explain that to customers that you've got these differing cancellation policies? And we had another airline who came up to us and said, actually, do you know what? This is an opportunity because we've got industries like pharmaceuticals who are still planning their incentive travel for the end of the year and they're going strong and they're not thinking about cancelling. So she talked about finding those opportunities. I mean, and I think overall, we kind of finished the session almost on a positive note, right? And I think we all agreed that it's really this opportunity now for innovation and for change and looking at how can your tourism business become more agile and kind of future-proofing it.
I agree with that. And I think there were two key points related to what you've just said there. One was in terms of the agility. Agility is obviously very important for business structures, but it's quite hard at the moment when cash flows are being limited. If the pre-coronavirus planning wasn't in place, it's quite hard to change the business model at this point. The other point that you mentioned about the international airline that we were talking about and where they were looking at positive opportunities, she also said that they have quite a lot of their tour group business booked towards the back end of the year. And at the moment, there's no sign that that's going to be cancelled. So I think there's this, you know, people are holding out the hopes that when the rebound comes, it will certainly be before then. So by the end of the year, there will be no need to cancel
those programs. I think that was the same sentiment when I was in Singapore last week talking to these travel agencies, and they were saying, you know, looking at the year end, we're really thinking that, you know, if things are kind of wrapped up with COVID-19 fairly soon, then there is going to be this massive spike in the year end. And then the only issue you might face then is capacity, because everybody is going to be fighting over these airline seats.
And we asked Phil C about this, about how when capacities drop, how do you bring them back up again? And he said there are a number of different ways to do it. But obviously with his airline, what they're tending to use is they're using smaller planes at the moment. They park their larger planes. So on their flights, they're using smaller planes because of the flight volumes, the passenger volumes are shorter. So there's automatically that opportunity to upgrade back to the larger planes. But in terms of routes, international routes, he said that's very, very difficult because obviously the slots are there, the slots can go missing. But it does seem that because so many airlines are not flying in and out of China, so a lot of, in Singapore, we're seeing a lot of airlines are reducing their capacities or even not flying into Singapore now, that there will be those available slots should there be a dramatic turnaround. But I don't think anybody's expecting that the turnaround would happen super fast.
No.
So even these capacities will be phased over several months, possibly even more than that.
I mean, and even if we were saying that the airline capacity remains the same as now, the fact is that so many more people will want to travel, especially if you're thinking about Singapore as an island nation, there's no real domestic tourism. People, as soon as they have that confidence to travel, are all going to want to travel there and then. So even if there's the same number of flights, nothing had been cancelled, there's probably still not going to be enough capacity, even without all of the downsizing and possibly losing flight rights and everything else.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% agree. So obviously, we're talking a lot about coronavirus or COVID-19 as it's been renamed. So we have to take a look at some of the latest statistics and occurrences. And you and I, Hannah, were just saying just before we started recording that, you know, at what point does this get actually designated as a pandemic? Because we are starting to see, well, this weekend, Italy and Iran, it seems to be spreading quite fast in both those countries. Both countries have taken quite strong measures to try and clamp it down, but we don't know how successful they will be. So let's have a look at some of the statistics, Hannah. What have we got in terms of the global cases at the moment?
So globally, there are 79,336 cases, and most of those are still in China. So 77,262 in China. So that leaves, what, about 2,000
overseas. And in China, there are so far just over 2,600 deaths, which is, what's that, about three times the amount of SARS, I think. SARS is around about 800, but that was globally.
Exactly. I mean, and then if we're looking at the next biggest destination after that, it's really Korea, isn't it? Which has just exploded.
Yeah, it really is. And the problem there is that yesterday there were 161 new cases in one day. Totally now it's about 763 cases. Seven people have died. They do seem to be in these pockets where it's expanding very, very fast. Daegu, I think the city of Daegu, there's a religious organization there. It seems to be a lot of the cases are related to people that but a part of that organization.
Exactly.
So Korea at the moment is right in the spotlight, and Japan as well, of course.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, they have 144 actually in the country, and then, of course, those hundreds more that come from the cruise ship.
Yeah, the Diamond Princess, there. which we'll be talking about a little bit later. Here in Southeast Asia, Singapore has the most cases, 89. I think it recorded 3 new cases yesterday. Malaysia still on 22, I believe.
Yeah.
Thailand's 35. That hasn't really increased too much.
No.
But when we're looking at, I mean, Italy, we mentioned just then, that's up to 152 cases now with 3 deaths. And the authorities, particularly in the northern regions of Lombardy and Veneto, are starting to take some quite strict measures.
Yeah, I mean, they are shutting down schools, aren't they?
Yeah, universities. Yeah, the Venice Carnival was shut 2 days early.
Yes.
The Milan Fashion Show, I think that's being curtailed. Some of the shows are going ahead, but with no spectators,
no there,
so
right?
they're just being
live
streamed. Yeah, and even some Serie A football matches this weekend were cancelled.
Yeah.
Because of the worry that if people gather in the same place.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and you know, these two regions, Milan and Venice, of course, are the top tourist destinations in Italy.
Yeah.
And certainly from Southeast Asian market, they are very, very popular holiday destinations as well.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to see this starting to affect outbound travel to Europe.
Yeah.
I mean, I was saying to Gary last week, I was feeling quite lucky. For one of my clients, I represent them for Europe. And I was saying, actually, we haven't had that many cases in Europe. We've been okay. I think suddenly with this change and this jump in cases in Italy, I think Southeast Asians are certainly now going to be looking at Italy saying, no, I don't think I'm
for
going
the foreseeable
to want to
future,
visit there.
For sure. Absolutely. So then bringing it back into Southeast Asia,
we
were reading an article just before we recorded this about Vietnam. And Vietnam is recording the possibility of a hit of, what was the figure? Something like
$4 billion.
$4 billion US dollars that will be hit because of the coronavirus in its tourism sector alone.
Yes.
And the Vietnam Department of Tourism actually issued a statement saying that the coronavirus is expected to cause a huge decrease to Vietnam's tourism industry in both the short term and the medium term. So we're looking probably at least half of the year.
Yeah. Right. I mean, and if we're talking about, again, back to Singapore, India have just issued even a travel advisory just over the weekend on 22nd of February, advising their citizens to avoid all non-essential travel to Singapore. And India is one of the big markets, again, for Singapore. It contributes about 7% in terms of overall tourism arrivals.
Yeah.
So,
and that's important
stern,
because the Singapore Tourism Board, working with the airlines, has made big strides over the last 2 or 3 years to appeal to cities outside of the tier one Indian cities. So it's trying to attract more from the tier two, tier three Indian cities, and it's been quite successful at that.
Yeah,
that's going to be a big hit. Obviously, the main market that this has all revolved around is the Chinese outbound market, which is at standstill right now. And the big travel trade fair, ITB China, which was supposed to take place in May of this year, has been postponed, and from what I'm hearing, it's not actually going to take place this year. It's not that it's going to be postponed until later in the year, that it actually has been cancelled for this year, which is going to have a huge impact, particularly on our region, because so much deal-making is done at that time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And talking about India, as you just did, that will put a lot of pressure on ITB India, which its debut show this year.
Okay.
That happens in April, so you know, I guess a lot of destinations that were probably going to go to both are now redirecting all of their marketing at this one market to try and draw as much travel as you can out of India over the next few months. But
who knows?
Who knows? Yeah,
who knows? Maybe India's next.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I mean, in terms of other incentive or meeting news, so Webin Travel Korea, I saw, has been cancelled today as well. And Singapore have advised that they're cancelling all all business meetings and events should be cancelled.
Right, of course. Right? So what we're seeing is the whole infrastructure of travel is just shutting down.
Yes.
You know, everything that actually facilitates travel, that facilitates trade buying, that facilitates booking, just at the moment is at standstill. And there is just, as we said earlier, unfortunately, no light in the tunnel at the moment. It's a pretty dark situation.
No. I mean, and I think that talking about, you know, Singapore, that probably brings us nicely to our second discussion.
Yeah.
This week, which is really about these stimulus measures. So, okay, we know that tourism is in some pretty dire straits in some countries at the moment. So what are the governments planning to do to help that? So Gary, I think you had some notes about what.
Yeah, well, Singapore last week actually held its annual budget. Mm. The government actually announced it on the 18th of February in the parliament. And it was prefaced by, I think it was the vice prime minister saying that the Singapore economy is facing considerable uncertainty,
yep.
not just from the coronavirus, mm-hmm. but also global economic sentiments.
Yes.
Issues about climate change. You know,
yeah.
Singapore is a small nation, it's a trading nation, mm-hmm. and it really relies on sentiment and strong economic flows around yes. the world. So coronavirus really has come at a very, very bad time for a country,
Absolutely.
All countries, but particularly Singapore.
Mm.
So they've looked at ways that they can actually try and help their own businesses stave off some of the cash flow pressures.
Mm.
One of the things that it tried to do to actually prevent consumer sentiment from dropping even further is that the goods and services tax, which is 7% in Singapore, was due to rise next year to 9%, which is quite a high rise.
Yeah.
So that has been defrayed now, and we don't quite know when that will happen.
Mm-hmm.
There are also cash payments are being given out to all Singaporeans to mitigate that when that does happen.
Yes.
Funds are being allocated for the Skills Future Credit Program, which allows everybody in Singapore, if you're a Singaporean citizen or a visa holder, to apply for retraining or even just skills training if you want to do something else related to. You can actually apply. I think it's $500 Singapore dollars per person, which is quite a lot.
That is quite a lot of money.
Yeah. And it's also offered a lot of stabilization support packages to business to actually prevent the cash flow going down. And we also looked at the airlines. It's actually made some effort to actually. Changi Airport, I think, is getting a rebate on its property tax.
Yeah,
some of the airlines are having their parking fees and their slot landing fees waived or at least brought down for a period of time. So there is this effort to try and, you know, reduce the logjam a little bit, but it's going to help in terms of it's not overloading on cost.
Yeah.
But if the passenger flows still aren't there, it's not going to make a huge amount of difference.
Yeah, exactly. And here in Malaysia, the government have said that they will release their stimulus measures in just a few days. So this coming Thursday, the 27th of February. So it'll be interesting to see what's in there. And again, Phil C, who was on our panel discussion at AmCham, was also saying, you've got to make sure you have the right stimulus.
Yeah.
You know, and that you're not just stimulating people who would have booked anyway and they're just taking advantage of cheaper rates.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll have to see what happens with that because, you know, there is a degree of political uncertainty here in Malaysia at the moment. Mm. But we also, the travel industry is suffering quite badly and there is going to be huge demand for payouts, for incentives and stimulus measures. But as you said, they have to be targeted in the right areas because even what it does seem, Phil C said this as well, is that when the rebound does come, and there will be a rebound and there will be an uplift in bookings. He doesn't see that it will actually paper over some of the damage that will be done in the first two quarters of the year.
Yeah, I mean, and there was even a great quote that Albert Tan, who is from the Malaysia Chinese Travel Association, MCTA here, said, and he said, there is a danger that this sector may collapse if no help is provided. I mean, and that's really saying it all, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know? I mean, that's a call for help, and you know, we hope that the government listens. I'm sure that it will do whatever it can, but the economy isn't growing very fast here.
Mm-hmm.
Last year was the lowest growth on GDP for I think 10 years.
Yeah.
So there is a bit of constraint on what the government can actually do, but there's also figures that have been published in the media last week that up to 100,000 Malaysian jobs across all sectors could be vulnerable if this is a prolonged crisis. So that, you know, action is needed and we will wait to see what happens on Thursday.
Yeah, a midterm part of Malaysia's effort to reboost this confidence is by concentrating on domestic travel and doing that switch. And we kind of touched on that in the last podcast, that they're going to have a fair called Cuti Cuti Malaysia. So that means traveling around Malaysia. Now, this fair is going to happen April 4th and 5th. It's going to be in KLCC, which is right in the heart of Kuala Lumpur.
Yeah, it's a prestigious venue.
Very prestigious venue, and actually an advantage probably over the usual B2C trade venue. Everybody always complains it's quite hard to get to, and parking's not great, and so on. So they're targeting to have 200 booths. They want to make 40 million ringgits worth of sales. But, I mean, the fact is that normally March Mata Fair, or last year, it generated 220 million.
It's a big drop.
You know, 220 million to 40 million.
Yeah. But, I mean, we also touched on this in the last podcast. Malaysia is relatively lucky there are two geographies.
Yes.
So there's East Malaysia and there's Peninsular Malaysia. So there's a lot of travel flows between those, and they actually offer quite a lot of different experiences in terms of travel. But as you were saying, in terms of that revenue drop between the matter fare, which is not primarily, but a lot of that business is outbound travel, and this is just domestic. Obviously, there isn't the airline fees that bump up the revenues there.
Yes.
So, you know, we're going to see a lot of discounting at this show, which is obviously going to hit the actual total revenues that they can make.
Absolutely.
But it's all about rebooting consumer confidence, getting people to travel, getting people to become comfortable with traveling again, even if it's owned domestically.
Yes.
Let's hope that works. We'll be going along to that show, so
absolutely,
we'll report back from that. Yeah.
We'll go have a look. And so let's come to our final subject of the week. Gary, during our AmCham event last Friday, you said promoting the 2020 Tokyo Olympic Games is this year's toughest job in tourism marketing. What did you mean by that?
Well, where do we start? I mean, I do feel very, very sorry for Tokyo 2020.
Yeah.
I lived in China during 2008, the Olympics in Beijing. And by now, at this point of the year, you know, the marketing rollout was in full swing.
Yes.
They were really trying to promote this across China because they really wanted a lot of the visitors to be from China and around the world.
Yep.
Japan wants the same things. It wants a lot of Japanese tourists to visit Tokyo for these games. But obviously, it wants to bring in as many people from around the world as it could.
Yes.
It set a target of 40 million inbound arrivals for this year, which at the moment looks like it'll get nowhere near.
Mm.
The games themselves take place from July the 24th through August 8th. So we're still a few months out.
Yeah.
And I noticed that last week, the two mascots that they have for these games started their European tour. And I just felt very sorry for the marketers because, you know, normally that would probably get quite a bit of media take up.
Yeah.
But at the moment, it's just been completely drowned out by the coronavirus. And that's going to continue. That's not going to happen. There's no way that that's going away.
No.
So the Japan economy itself is also struggling. The Prime Minister said that there is a danger that it could go into a recession. But for these games, you know, it's a huge financial commitment for Japan to host them. You do rely on forward bookings, forward ticket sales.
Yeah.
At the moment, that's not going to happen.
No.
Although we said it's not until July.
Yeah.
People's decisions on traveling at the moment, they won't be going to Japan right now. It's not on radar for most travelers, particularly in our region.
Yes.
And that also, before that, we've got the Sakura season coming up in springtime, which over the past few years has become a real major tourism event in the calendar.
It is. And, you know, if you go to all of the travel fairs, the TITF, the Thai one that I was in at January, normally in Malaysia, you know, Mata, Astindo and so on, especially around this time, they really promote Japan with cherry blossoms. Yeah. You go and those are all of the pictures, those are all of the tour packages being promoted.
Yeah.
This is one of the peak times to travel, really.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you look at 2018 numbers, the numbers are really, really growing from Southeast Asia. So Philippines up to November 2019 was up 46.4% on the previous year. Thailand up 28.5%, Vietnam 25.6%, Malaysia 15.8%, Singapore 15.3%. So there's this huge, or there was last year, there's huge interest.
Yeah. And you went to the Thai trade fair, the Bangkok trade fair, was it earlier this year or was it the end of last year?
Yes.
And you said that Japan basically took up most of the show because there is just, there was this upswing from Thailand of travel to Japan.
So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out, really.
Yeah, I think it is. And, you know, these events are being hosted in Tokyo and the Tokyo Bay Area, but they'll also be hosted in other cities across Japan as well.
Yeah.
So there really was a hope that they would be able to disperse some of this tourism across the country.
Yeah.
But at the moment, that's looking a forlorn hope. And if you're marketing an event 6 months out, you really want to get good momentum at the beginning. And it must be difficult for those that are marketing Tokyo 2020 right now because they're just not getting any cut through in the media at all. Also, this year we have another big event, which is in Dubai.
The World Expo.
That's a little bit later in the year. That spans, I think it starts in October and runs through to April next year.
Yeah.
But at the moment, you know, again, you'll be looking at pre-bookings for corporates, you'll be looking at pre-ticket sales.
Yeah, very difficult. And you know, UAE has had cases of coronavirus, hasn't it, now with Iran?
Yeah.
Who knows how it's going to develop in the Middle East, really? Yeah.
So we're depressing ourselves even more.
Sorry, guys.
Hopefully with our next show we'll have something less depressing.
Yeah, we'll find some positive news to talk about.
we'll make that our objective.
Yes,
our
next show, let's do it.
Our next positive show will be upbeat, we
yes,
promise.
Upbeat Southeast Asia travel news. So we would love to hear your thoughts, experiences on these, and any other travel topics that are burning a hole in your pocket too. So drop us a note via Facebook at the SEA Travel Show, Twitter at SEA Travel Show, and Instagram at SEA Travel Show.
And drumroll, Hannah, our new website is now live.
Woohoo!
www.theseasiatravelshow.com. I'll say that again. www.theseasiatravelshow.com. It's got all of our previous podcasts up there. It's got some more information about ourselves,
yeah,
about some of the projects that we'll be launching a little bit later in the year as well. So do please listen in to any of the episodes if you've missed any of the ones that we've done before today.
Yeah, check it out. I think it's a pretty jazzy site.
We love it, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
We're quite proud of it.
Yeah, it's official now. Well, that's a wrap for this week's podcast. Have a great week, and we look forward to talking Southeast Asia travel and tourism again with you very, very soon.